This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
I'm Joe Rooney and I played Father Damo.
And I'm Patrick McDonald and I played Owen McLove.
And this is Talking Ted, a show about the memories, stories and insights into what has made Father Ted the prize sheep of Irish TV shows.
This week, we're joined by Ardal O'Hanlon, who played local curate Father Dougal, and also Pat Short, who played shotgun enthusiast Tom.
And this is the first episode, the first season, and it's called Good Luck, Father Ted. So we're ready now. We're going to play the first episode and have a chat about it. Yeah. The music, of course, written by Neil Hannon.
That's right, from the Divine Comedy. And that's Inisheer. And we performed at a festival in Inisheer.
Remember that? A Father Ted festival.
Yeah, Michael came over and he said he'd never go back to the Aran Islands because of the boat journey.
Michael Redmond, who played Father Stone.
So we went over to Inisheer and I saw the boat that's on the things. I got inside the boat. Yeah.
Big rusty boat,
yeah. And there were loads of people there dressed as stuff like hairy babies and bishops and whatever, yeah.
Yeah, that only happened one year. It was mad, actually. It was almost like an episode of Father Ted over there. It was a bit nuts. But we've been to the Ted Fest as well. That's Inishmore.
Yeah.
And there's nothing ever has been on Inishman, the third of the Aran Islands.
They hate Father Ted.
They hate everyone.
They hate everyone. You just don't go there,
They don't even want tourists.
No, they don't.
No. I was going to say if they're listening, but they won't be listening.
They won't
to
be
this.
Listening. No.
So we're looking at the first bit.
Yeah. What were you doing in your life when this was recorded?
Okay.
You were at the recordings, weren't you?
I was at... Okay, but I was going over to... I'd met Graham when I was in a band. He was working for the Hot Press and he interviewed the band I was in. So I knew him that way. And I met him then and he said, oh, I'm in London. Listen, if you're ever over... You can stay. I was going over to London doing 5 minute spots. I was flying over to London to do about 5 minutes in this shit club and doing gigs in Ireland as well. But what were you doing?
Oh, I was working in the Dublin Woolen Mill selling jumpers.
Were you?
Yeah. So I'd never done stand up comedy or anything when that was on. And it was only later, it was September of 95, I started doing it.
No way, that's unbelievable.
So I was just like, I would have watched that and got up the next morning and gone to the shop.
You were working in the shop during the first series.
And you were
in the second?
In the third series. Yeah. But I'd been writing comedy and I was interested in comedy and I knew people who knew the writers, and I was definitely heading in that direction.
Yeah.
And I really wanted it to be bad.
Because you thought, oh, it's an Irish comedy, it'll be rubbish.
And it's about priests, oh God.
I know.
Yeah, so it'll be really bad.
Yeah.
Because there had been, Leave It to Mrs. O'Brien was a sitcom about priests.
About priests on RTE.
Anna Manahan.
It was awful.
Yeah. And I knew Dermot Morgan was going to be in it, and he'd been very good in so many things.
He was rather trendy.
Yeah. And I loved Scratch Saturday. I loved it. Scratch Saturday.
Yeah,
I thought that was brilliant. And so I knew he was involved. And it could be okay. And I heard about Ardal and I'd seen Ardal on television, thought he was very, very
good. And Ardal was brilliant.
Yeah.
He was great stand-up. Ardal was doing good stand-up when very few of us Irish fellas were. We were trying to come to terms. How do you do stand-up?
Yeah.
And
he was ahead of the game.
Yeah,
he was ahead of the curve, definitely. Yeah.
And like, I love Frank Kelly from years ago.
I worshipped him.
Yeah.
On Halls Victoria.
Halls Victoria Weekly.
There's a picture of me. I wonder should I try and get it. My brother probably has it. Me with my hair tied up like that counsellor in Ballymagash.
Oh, yeah.
Character. I loved him.
And we at home had an album, a Frank Kelly album, and there was some brilliant sketches. There was one about the boys, they go... There wasn't much to do in the village, and we go, we'll go down and watch the bacon slicer. That was funny stuff.
Yeah. But Polly McLean had been in Scrap Saturday as well. So she's good pedigree.
Nighthawks.
But I still hoped it was awful. And then I'd say within about a minute, I thought it was brilliant.
But like, there's Ardal. Ardal literally had made his mind up about not long before that to leave Dublin, go to London. And within months, he was doing.
That's right.
A sitcom on Channel 4.
Yeah,
well, amazing.
Amazing. Yeah, you wouldn't happen now. And now we'll be talking to Ardal O'Hanlon about how he got the part in Father Ted and his time playing Father Dougal.
I went in February of 1994, and I'd say the casting probably happened during that summer. So yeah, you'd be talking about 6 months later. Yeah, I was doing the Edinburgh Festival, I think, or it was just before the Edinburgh Festival, which would start at the beginning of August. So it would have been in probably July that the casting was happening. I kind of knew Arthur and Graham, who are the writers, and they were living in London, and they were doing things like with, do you remember Mel Smith and Griffiths Jones? And they had also written a sitcom with Alexei Sale called Paris. So they were doing pretty well in London as writers. Now, I didn't know them that well. Like, they came from Hot Press, and, you know, they weren't, like, even though it was really weird because the comedy scene started in the International Bar in Dublin, and the Hot Press people, all the writers and art people like Arthur and Graham also hung out in the International Bar, but in a separate part of it. And we kind of hated them, which is kind of weird, like, because they were really cool, you know, and comedians were seen as sort of upstarts in those days. It wasn't the cool medium at that time. But anyway, yeah, so I got this call from Arthur, basically. He had come to a few of my shows, and we were sort of hanging out, but not really. And he rang me and said, it was the last day of casting in London, at Hubbard's Casting, and he said, you know, will you come in? I don't think I was on a list or anything. It was just Arthur had a kind of a whim. He said, oh, Ardal hasn't come in yet for the Dougal part, so we'll have a look at him. So I don't know, I was at home, I was probably gigging somewhere that night in London or around England or somewhere, and I kind of got on the tube and I went into town and I went in to meet them, and there was a big bunch of people in the room. Head of Channel 4 was there, and the head of Hattrick was there, and the writers were there. So I just went in there, and I do remember it very well, because only Arthur was laughing at what I was doing. So I'd never seen any of the material before. So I was given this page and told to just read, like, so somebody else read in the Father Ted part, and I just had to read the Father Dougal part. And I remember thinking it was really funny and really sort of really getting it, you know, really, you know, because I kind of twigged Arthur's sense of humor anyway from knowing him socially. And he was the only one sort of responding to it. So I thought, well, that's that, you know, like it. And then the next week, I think I was up at the Edinburgh Festival, and I got another call saying, would you go over to Dublin? Because by then, I think they had cast Dermot, or they had settled on Dermot, or they were thinking of using Dermot anyway. But then they wanted to see the two of us together to see would we work together, what they call a chemistry reading. So it was a big effort, because, like, just getting from, like, I had a show in Edinburgh that night, and I had to fly back to Dublin to do this reading with Dermot. And we'd never really met each other before, and it was all a bit weird, and we were putting a room together for an hour or two, and we were given a bunch of scenes, and we were just told to kind of mess around with them. And then I went back to Edinburgh, and about a week later then I got a call saying, oh, you have the part. Let's start talking to
great talking to Ardal there, and we'll be talking to Ardal again later on in the season.
I have to say, very nice guy.
He's such a nice guy. He never went to his head. He's still the same fella.
Very humble. I didn't meet him beforehand, but he wasn't an arsehole at all.
No.
So helpful and so nice.
He was focused on what he wanted to do.
Very professional.
Yeah.
But not a megalomaniac or a narcissist or any of that business. No.
And it's he's the same fella now.
That's right, yeah.
He's a lovely fella.
Yes.
I hope he
Ardal,
comes
we
on.
Really like you.
I hope
he... I worked with Frank Kelly just before he died.
Did you? In
a Mall, yeah. Mm. In the Gaiety. Yeah. And he wasn't well. Like, you know, he'd been through cancer.
Yeah.
I think he had Parkinson's disease, and he hadn't announced this, so, you know. He hadn't. And so he struggled with lines, you know, he was struggling with the script, but as soon as he performed, he was amazing. Like, the minute he was...
Right.
Yeah. And he was so different in real life to how he was on screen.
Unbelievable.
No one never met anyone who was so different.
But he just had that, he knew what was funny.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah, but Meg, he wasn't that funny off screen. I mean, he was quite serious. He'd read the Irish Times and talk about whatever article he was just reading.
A little bit. The odd little bit now badness will come out of him.
And a lot of anecdotes about theatre and whatever. But the minute he started acting, he was amazing.
Absolutely.
Incredible. Yeah, there he is now. He's playing a younger Jack. Looking at the girls, which you wouldn't get away with now. There's no way
he said he's going to teach them in the gym, yeah, and it's very hot, so you'll have to take your tracksuit tops off. He's dreaming about that.
Drooling then. Not a chance.
No.
Absolutely amazing.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And they have the old telly as well.
Yeah. Now, Ireland's so good at being that innocent idiot. Kind of idiot savant.
Yes. Ardle talks about it in his act, how he is, people assume he's stupid. And I have had that all my life. People assume. Even I'm working at the weekend and people come up, you're a big idiot. And, like they assume this almost slow down for you. And
I think that's admirable. I think that's what I really do.
But I can do this.
No, I think the comedian on stage shouldn't be trying to show off at how smart he is. That really annoys me when comedians do that.
Just be funny.
Be the idiot. So what?
Absolutely. Yeah. Just be funny, but don't try to be smart. Don't try to reveal how smart you are. Because, I mean, Ardle's a very erudite guy. We're really going to town on Ardle. I mean, you know, there could be a nasty side
of Ardle.
But he's such an erudite bloke. And but he doesn't show it off on stage. He doesn't. No. Yeah.
Mrs. Doyle's a great character.
That was brilliant. Yeah. Mm. My mother was very like that.
That was a thing that we all know, being Irish, where you go into a house and they said, "Do you want a cup of tea?" And you couldn't refuse tea.
Or a dinner.
Or yeah.
You know, anyone who came to the house, there'd be a dinner. Yeah. And it'd be a massive, we made massive dinners back then.
Yeah.
Like the little things we eat now, you know. Like the amount of potatoes on a plate were just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a generational thing. You see the people who love carveries, the amount of...
But like there are those, my mother was quite aggressive like that with forcing tea and cakes and whatever we had on people and making them eat. And that is recognisable straight away.
Straight away here.
I doubt if English people knew that because they tend not to be quite like that.
No, I think it's an immigrant thing. It's a thing where you're showing up. You don't want people to think you have nothing. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, maybe, right. Because we had nothing, so we have to show that we have loads, tons, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you didn't have a famine and loads of people died, you wouldn't. You'd just keep the biscuits in and not tell them about them.
Do you want to show that you have loads of food?
Yes, I know what you mean. Yeah. So that's what it was going on.
Mm, yeah. And the two priests in single beds beside each other is brilliant as well.
Yeah.
Of course, that was a normal thing in 50s movies where you'd see... husband and wife sleeping on single beds.
Well, the husband and wife is in separate beds, and Laurel and Hardy in the same bed.
Oh, were they?
Yeah.
And so Bert, two men. And Bert and Ernie. Oh, they had separate beds.
Yeah. It was always funny to see, Rock Hudson and that going to bed with Doris Day, and they were in separate beds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like it was code.
You would think that was. Oh, that's the way Americans do it, is it? You know, that's what I always thought.
But I suppose in the seminary, I'm not sure if they... I went to college in Maynooth and they were, they were seminary and I don't know if they shared rooms.
Yeah.
But they probably did.
I'd say they did. Yeah. Say
they would have definitely did. Not officially, but
do you remember we had to share rooms at the beginning touring?
Oh, yeah. Awful. Oh
my God.
Yeah.
Awful B&B rooms. Yeah. Remember that stinking room up in
Donegal? In Letterkenny,
And there's Pat Short.
Oh,
I Shot JR, of course, is an iconic t-shirt now.
And now we're going to chat with Irish comedy legend Pat Short.
Yeah, Pat Short was part of Dunbelievables with John Kenny, and they were huge at the time, a double act touring around the country to massive audiences. And John Kenny, of course, played two roles in Father Ted, and we'll be chatting to him later on in the season as well.
Absolutely, and Pat went on to further sitcom success with the RTE show Killing a Scully, also featuring me.
Hi, it's Pat Short here, and I play Tom in Father Ted.
How are you, Pat? How's things? So you played. Good. You said you played five episodes, and
I think so. Yeah.
Can you remember back to did you audition for that part,
Pat? I did indeed. I remember myself and John Kenny were playing in Andrews Lane at the time, I think, and as the Unbelievables, and we both got a call to go down and meet in Hobart. I think Hobart's the casting. They were, John and Ross, and we knew John and Ross from previous. Films and bits and bobs with Dominic. So I went down to the audition and sure, I was sitting in a room with a whole lot of people, you know, the usual. Yeah. And I think I was reading for Dougal.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I think my call was for Dougal and Tom. And I think Ardle had only accepted it the day before I went down there. So they told me when I was there that there was no point in reading unless I'd learned the lines, yeah. but that they were most likely that that was gone already to Ardle. I knew Ardle from Mr. Trellis, of course, and yeah. we'd been doing, you know, we like with yourself, Joe, we'd all been doing the comedy circuit together, you know, so we all knew each other. So, like, you know, I'm like, I was delighted for Ardle, but I didn't even know what he'd got. I didn't, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
none of us knew what was going on at that time.
Oh yeah, yeah, and so then you did, and like at the time you would have been fairly big with the Unbelievables, like you would have been touring a lot at the time, yeah.
Yeah, we were. I suppose we'd have been kind of the first show we took offers was one hell of a do, and that would have been running a year or so at that stage. So we would have been well established in the comedy world, yeah, at that point.
Right, yeah.
And the guys would have known us because I think the lads had been working at Hot Press, hadn't they, at the time or so. Anyway, they would have known us at the time, you know.
And so what did you think of that character? That's such a brilliant, it's a brilliant character, and you're really well cast, I think, in that role.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was a brilliant character. I remember Graham Linehan one time telling me it was one of his, outside of the main cast, one of his favourite characters, recurring characters that kept coming back. But then he didn't put me in the series 3, so maybe he did. he went off me. I can't remember. But no, I remember maybe he was telling everyone that at the back of the catering bus. anyway, we won't talk about that. But yeah, it was a great character. At the time, we had done, what was the name of the programme? It was a programme on RTE. Myself and John had done it, and it was based around Tom and Jerry, the two characters we had.
All right.
And I'd worked with Tommy McCardle, who's a director in RTE, and he's from Monaghan, gas man himself, and his brother, two great writers and directors. So he and I when I did the audition for Tom, I was trying to think what kind of a character would he be, you know. And I loved Tommy's accent, the Monaghan accent. So I kind of used a bit of Monaghan kind of. All approach right. to him, that yeah. madness, and that's kind of how I based the accent, was half Mon and half Tipperary. Yeah. You know?
I shot JR t-shirt, of course, is iconic, but I mean, I don't know if younger people will know that that was such a big thing. Like,
I know, it's funny, isn't it? That was huge.
On Dallas.
Who shot JR? When we were kids, Who Shot JR was the big thing. And then it became a running joke in those country western songs about it, Who Shot JR? And the funny thing about that was, I shot JR, Tom, the music. that was really, really funny. And, you know, to me and my generation, and you, Joe, we would find that hilariously funny. But I wonder, the younger generation would have no concept of Who Shot JR at all, you know, or how massive that cliffhanger was on a TV show. And the funny thing is, I remember the second series. You see, I did the pilot, or the first one, in Donabate. And then I came back, did the rest of the series or something. We did the series then after that. Didn't get on to Clare for the rest of the first series. Anyway, and then the second series down in Clare, they didn't have the t-shirt. So I think they got one made up inside in the shop, man, in Limerick, because it was simple as that. Yeah, and because I think it was thrown away or something like that. Because really? It's the one thing I am asked everywhere in the world, Joe, I swear to God, is do I have the original t-shirt? Of course not. You know, it went back into the water truck and went away. But it was that easy to get it met up. You could just go to it. And I did a tour of Australia recently, and every radio station I went into, they presented me with an I Shot JR t-shirt.
Are you serious?
So, you know yourself, you're doing the promo for the gig.
Yeah.
You do a local radio station in each city, like Sydney or Melbourne or whatever it was. And every one of these, huge fans of Father Ted down there, and obviously, and the nudie character, you know.
That's unbelievable. It's such a huge show, you know, that
my brother, like, when you're right, the first series came out, and it got quite a slating, I remember, in the Irish media, because it was there was a previous sitcom in Ireland called Leave It to Mrs. O'Brien, and which was about a priest's house, and Mrs. O'Brien was the housekeeper, and it wasn't that well received, and they were kind of associating to that, and you know, Father Ted was fairly mad, and people just didn't get it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Initially, it was so it's hard to explain that to someone now. I mean, I remember when I read the first script, going, "Oh my Jesus, what's going on here?" It was mental. But it looks now. Now you look at it, it looks so ordinary. But it was mad stuff of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the first series was out, And it wasn't set till the second series. And my brother Joe was teaching over in England in a school. And he rang me one day and says, "They know who I am." And I said, "What are you talking about?" "They know I'm your brother." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "The class, the kids in the school, they're fucking Father Ted fanatics." And he said, "They're slagging me." And he said, "It's only now they've got it. They didn't get it last year." Yeah. And he said, I remember Joe saying to me, "Well, look, so you're onto a good thing with that show, because," he said, "if the kids love it, it's huge."
Yeah, yeah.
And he was right. It was massive in the UK.
Oh, it's still massive, like, yeah.
It still is, yes, of course. I remember being on holidays in Portugal. I visited, my brother was out with his wife, and my kids and his kids had been similar age a couple of years ago. And I got this scream from the room next door. They had a Father Ted DVD box. Mm. They didn't know I was in it.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. They all absolutely loved it. It's an amazing show that keeps moving generation after generation, yeah, watching it and getting it. And it's the wonderful characters of Dougal. And they're all daft. You know, all the characters are daft, yeah, and silly and childish. And it's so funny, you know, so funny.
Yeah, and you kind of know those characters. Like, a lot of those characters, you kind of know them from rural Ireland, like the boring fella, like Father Stone, the fella who comes visits the house, but he just sits there and says nothing.
I mean, I think that's some of the best comedy is like that, when you identify with the character. And the daftness of it. They find the humour in the silliness. You know?
And this fella's like Tom all over Ireland as well.
Yeah, sitting on walls.
Yeah.
And you know, you just do not want to get engaged with this guy because he could kill you.
yeah. Although I was only saying to Patrick now, a lot of those characters in Father Ted, they're probably diagnosed now in modern society.
Just probably a drug for them.
Yeah.
I remember the first episode that went out of it, Joe, actually. And my dad was over in Wales. I don't know, was he on a holiday or something? And the first episode went out. It was my first TV role. So kind of, Channel 4 and across the water and all that kind of thing. So he was all excited. And it was the one where I had to drop my trousers and say, "Dad, will you have a look at that?" My own dog did that to me. Doesn't it look like a face?
Yeah, that's brilliant.
And my dad wasn't that impressed at all. No. And that was my big international debut on television.
Yeah. Parents are never impressed with that kind of
thing. No, I don't think so.
All right, listen, thanks a lot, Pat. Thanks for chatting, and sure, I'll see you around anyway.
Yeah, Joe, lovely talking to you. Let's start talking Ted.
It was great chatting to Pat there, wasn't it? He's brilliant.
Absolutely. A few revelations there.
Yeah, the fact that he was going to audition for the part of Dougal was something I'd never known.
Yeah, Dougal could have been a psychopath.
With a shotgun. We're just going to take a break now to tell you about another podcast that's on the Headstuff Podcast Network. It's called Basically
with Stephanie Preisner, where she takes complicated topics and makes them very simple.
And it's also got brilliant guests like Micheál Martin,
Luke O'Neill,
and others. And they basically get to the nub of the matter, whatever might be on.
None of the flim-flam.
No.
Just the nub.
Yeah. Have a listen now.
Hello, my name is Stephanie Preisner and I'm here to tell you about my show, Basically. It's all in the name, really. The show makes things basic for people. We've done episodes about world religions, we've done episodes about COVID, we've done a lot of episodes about mental health and different aspects of mental health to make things accessible to people. One of the great things about the podcast is that you can contact me and let me know what topics you would like. So have a listen, see if anything tickles your fancy. And if there's something there that you think is missing, please get in touch with the show. We'll cover the topic and then you can listen to it. We're part of the Headstuff Podcast Network, so you can find us on headstuffpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. See you soon.
Now back to the episode. A huge thing, who shot JR back when Dallas was big. Because there could be people listening to this that don't remember
who JR was or anything. Dallas. It was a phenomenon. In 1980, JR was the biggest character on television. Like JR Ewing. And it was huge in Ireland.
Yeah.
It was massive. Yeah. And even like the Redemptorists used to come around on the missions. And you know, there was always like, did you ever have missions where you grew up?
Yeah. Missions
it'd be 3 days, 3 or 4 days. You go to mass every
night.
It'd
be really long mass.
And there'd be a stall outside selling shit like that, like
crosses
and the little cameras, the television sets with pictures of the Pope.
Oh yeah.
And lourdes and whatever. Yeah. And the Redemptorists would always, every year, to come and say, there's a program on television now, and I've seen it, and it's a disgrace. It's called Dallas.
Really?
And everyone in like where I grew up watched Dallas. Yeah. And the whole place went silent and with guilt. But J.R. was shot, and it was the biggest thing, and there was a massive hit by T.R. Dallas called Who Shot J.R. Ewing? Who shot old J.R. down? Okay. Who shot that son of a Texas gun that night in Dallas town?
Oh my God, that's brilliant. You can remember that.
Yeah. But it was the biggest song in Ireland at the time, probably in that was huge. That was our punk.
Yeah.
That was a massive hit. And
The Simpsons did a take on it as well. Who shot
Mr. Burns? But it was a phenomenon. So that was a callback to that. Obviously, it was a phenomenon in Ireland. It was a worldwide success, but it particularly appealed to us. And lots of people had Dallas type, like South Fork was the house, big house in Dallas, and you see them all over Meath and Louth.
They named their houses.
Someone who did well with a South Fork, like South Fork. Would you get away with the whole drink thing now? The drink. Girls. Actually, do you know, about 20 years ago, there was a priest transferred, like an alfala, to the parish, and he drank 10 grand of funds on drink. He drank it all.
Really?
Yeah, it was meant to be decorating the houses, the parochial houses and the churches, and he spent it all on drink. And it was in the newspaper or something at the time, Father Jack, real life Father Jack.
Oh, yeah.
But
It's common enough to have the drunk priest.
The alcoholic priest,
whiskey priest.
I thought priests, I grew up in 1978, the World Cup in Argentina was on, and all the priests used to go to different parochial houses every night to watch the games. So you'd see all like Ford Capris or whatever outside the park. Yeah. And I thought priests had the life. I thought it was the best life. I wanted to be a priest.
Yeah.
Really wanted it. Yeah.
I wanted to be a brother. I thought a brother would be good. You go off to an Africa.
And what's the difference between a brother and a priest?
I thought, a brother doesn't have to say mass and do funerals, doesn't he?
Well, they're not allowed to say mass.
They're not allowed. Yeah. They go, but I thought they'd go off to missions a lot.
Yeah. Teaching schools.
They teach. Like, there was a brother in school at CBS in Drogheda who taught art, and he used porn magazines for life drawing. Which. At the time, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
but it was actually ridiculous.
Yeah. But no, I did. I really, I thought it would be fantastic. My mother really was enthusiastic that I would be a priest and go off to the, you know. I went to college in Maynooth. My parents thought I might just find a vocation there and that, you know. But I thought, you know, I really couldn't be celibate. But I was celibate for most of my time in Maynooth.
Right.
And the priests were writing everything.
Right.
Unbelievable, rampant.
Yeah.
Each other, but other, like they were very successful. Women loved the clerical students at that time. They went mad for them. So, you know, I mean, even like, you know, you think the bohemian types, they all wanted a priest boyfriend. Yeah. Seriously.
What is the allure, I wonder?
I don't know, forbiddenness or something. Yeah.
Celebrity, I suppose.
Yeah. There were celebrity priests. There was a big...
Father Cleary?
No, yes. Well, but there were in Maynooth, there was a big song contest every year. And they had like, it's later on, but like they'd have the leather jackets on, but they'd have the sensible jumper underneath. And the women loved them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was actually talking to a fellow who was a priest. He's working in a petrol station now. But he said...
That's a come down.
I know it is. They wanted to watch it in the seminary. Father Ted, that is.
And when he's giving you back the change, does he put it in your mouth?
And it was against the rules to watch it. And we're told to go to bed.
Yeah.
Like Arthur Matthews has clergy in his family, doesn't he?
He does. His uncles are some. He did. And but priests, like what you forget now is there's no priests. Or, you know, there's very few priests left.
Yeah.
And they're very, generally quite liberal. And I've been around country doing different work. You know, we tour a lot and you meet a priest and they're never in the garb. Like, they never wear the garb. They wear
the
jumpers and stuff. Yeah, they're undercover.
Yeah.
And there's only one in the area, like, there's so few. But growing up, there were just tons. We had the highest per capita number of priests per capita. You know, there were one priest every
in the world.
People.
Ireland had.
Yeah. So there was one to every 1,000 people. I just don't think.
And they had
that.
A lot of power. And they were like, powerful people.
Like the priest was more powerful than the local politicians, say. The yeah. local councillor had no power really compared to a priest.
Because I remember like down in Meath, when I was growing up there in Meath, the parish priest giving out about the Galway races. Like in a packed church, he was giving out about the amount of money that was gambled at the Galway races, and he wasn't getting enough in the basket. And my father, who's from Galway, walked out of the church. It was the only time he walked out.
And we forget watching it now that it's such just a comedy about the...
Yeah.
The context is gone almost for so many people.
It is, yeah, it is funny now. Like, were you an altar boy ever?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Loved it, yeah.
You loved it?
Oh.
I hated it.
Really?
I got stage fright badly. Like, I didn't want to ring the bell in case I get the wrong time.
Well, I shook the cruets, or what to call them?
Don't know.
The thing, the wine and the water.
Yeah.
The first time I did it, and everyone was laughing.
Right.
You know, I loved it. It was my first taste of show business. I was captain of the altar boys. I was the man who held the cross at the Easter parade. I flipping loved it.
Really?
Well. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't know. I had 1 year of it, and the reward at the end of the year was to go to Butlins. And 4 or 5 days before we were going, I went over the handlebars of my bicycle and smashed my lips and teeth in, and I couldn't even go to Butlins. So I was like, I'm not doing it I'm not doing it next year. The priest comes into the class and goes, hands up who's volunteering to be an altar boy next year. And I wouldn't put my hand up, and other boys did. And then he went out of the room. He came back in. He said, there's a boy here. His mother's very sick, and I'm sure she'd love him to be an altar boy next year. It was me. Everyone knew it was me.
Yeah.
And I still wouldn't put the hand up.
Good man, Joe. Yeah. Cry freedom.
Yeah.
Good man. No, I loved it. I was a little lick arse, and I made loads of money from it.
Right.
Yeah. On a Saturday, you could do a funeral and a christening and a wedding and make good money.
Could you?
Yeah, really?
Well, I never saw that side of it.
Oh,
now.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, that would have changed my mind.
Yeah.
Here, we're looking at now, you know, the fun fair. That is brilliant,
brilliant.
Isn't it?
That's like, what won it over for me, because even a few years ago, I brought my kids to, where were we? We were in Kinsale, and we were at a fun fair. Mm. And they were on the, you know, you sit in a cup and it spins around. It's like a cup and saucer.
Yeah.
And it was pathetic. I have a great clip of them just looking dour at the time.
Yeah.
And someone playing the accordion beside the these cups.
I know,
four cups. And
amazing.
Looking miserable. It was rubbish.
Yeah.
And like everything in Ireland was a bit rubbish.
Yeah, yeah.
Growing
yeah.
up. It was just, it was good for Ireland. That was the saying. I was, you know, how was the film? I was good for an Irish film. It's good for an Irish programme. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good enough for us. And everything. Yeah. And so we had fun fairs. We had the hurdy-gurdies, they used to call them. You know, so the fun fair would come around. But
they'd
rubbish.
Also have stupid things like there'd be a cow in a field and you'd bet on where it did a shit.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
yeah, it'd be one swing or something. And
oh, yeah, the boat swings.
Yeah, the boat swings, yeah.
Where you pull the rope.
My mother pissed herself on that.
Did she?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that really captures that. What do they call like a fun fair?
Fun fair, yeah.
Yeah. Look at that one. Look at that one there. Like, there's Father Jack going around in a circle in a thing, but behind them, there's a man on a stepladder.
Yeah.
And another fella running up, but running away from him. I don't even know what that's about,
no.
but it's hilarious.
It's brilliant. Yeah.
And I just imagine writing that or telling, they must have been on set to tell, because it.
Well, Arthur grew up in Louth and, you know, he would have witnessed all of that.
Yeah.
The world, yeah. That.
Yeah,
just slightly off.
Yeah,
cheap world. We accepted.
Yeah, there's a bit now where they go into a fortune teller. It's funny. I went to a fortune teller when I was about 21, and I was really scared. I was really scared. I thought they were, and I was working next door in a record shop, and next door to the fortune teller in George's Arcade. And the first thing she said is, "There's music in your life." She's looking at my pal. I'm going, yeah, I work in the record shop next door. And then you'll cross water.
Right.
Whatever that means.
I'd be very impressed if she could look at a record without seeing the sleeve or the inner thing and guess the music from that.
Yeah.
If she was that good.
That would
at
be good. Reading records.
Yeah.
That would be a good. Let's talk about Pat Short, though. What, like, at that time, Dunbelievables, huge. They were amazing. Right.
And then every time they appeared in the Late Late, they got better and better. And their live shows, you could see them on the, and when I went over to film the episode I was in, the two lads were watching it, watching The Unbelievables. When I went into their little office, they were watching them.
Who was that?
The two lads, the Graham lads, were watching it. And they were just that much in awe of them. You know, they were phenomenal.
Absolutely.
And it was a great moment then just to get the two lads on this
absolutely, and
series.
Like, Pat's amazing in this. It's so, one thing about Father Ted is so well cast, isn't it? I mean, I think...
Unreal.
That was a great role for Pat Short. It's just perfect.
It was almost like the stars were aligned when Father Ted was made, because you had, the church was just about to go on the wane. It was just like 5 years previously, they were really strong. Suddenly they were just on the wane.
Yeah,
there were still loads of priests, but they didn't quite have the same power.
Yeah,
we were becoming more liberal. Suddenly, you had all of these amazing performers.
Yeah,
great Manarta, who were working on so many great British television shows. Yeah. You know, Declan Lowney, who directed that the first two series, he was coming through.
Right,
and
yeah.
It was just like the stars were aligned and everything was in place. And suddenly, you had this generation of actors coming through who were
And then the writers knew these actors, although it was shot and it was all done in London mostly, right? But they knew they were bringing these people over.
Yeah. But the lads knew the stand-up scene and the burgeoning stand-up scene, Irish stand-up scene, and not just even in Dublin, but also in London. There were many Graham Norton had gone to London, and
it being a stand-up helped when shooting the indoor stuff in the studio with a live audience, because being a stand-up, you knew how to pause your line for a laugh to come back in before the laugh dies down. But I mean, I think that's
100%
really helpful.
And you didn't have to be a particularly great actor to be in Father Ted. I felt
no.
You know, I mean, it really could be, because I'll talk to Michael Redmond about it. We went, I did an audition for Angela's Ashes just after the Hubbards cast it.
Yeah.
It was they might as well have just got someone off the street to do it, because I couldn't act. I didn't know how. I'd never acted.
Yeah.
And like,
For example, my character is so big in Father Ted. I mean, I'd done loads of auditions for film where I was far too big as well. You know what I mean? I was really...
I brought it down since, and we've done lots of work since. Yeah, so you brought it down, somewhat do a better job.
Yeah, yeah.
But at that time, you didn't have to. It was just like, do whatever you do on stage and it'll work.
Yeah.
And so it was brilliant for a lot of comedians.
Yeah, it was really good.
Now, Pat Short's a brilliant actor as well, in fairness to him.
He is, And
and it also did, I mean, there was a lot of great acting talent in the show as well, you know. A lot of great, top called Jim Norton and people like that, you know.
Absolutely.
Came through.
It's pretty amazing, though, for the first episode to have also even that bit we've just seen where it's dreams, reality, that little cartoon thing that was brought in the very first episode. It was quite nice.
Yeah, very clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
And also so many things happen in that first episode. We've just talked over it, but...
we didn't refer to them.
Yeah. Well, like, when you think about it, her first episode, you've introduced the four main characters, and you know who they are fairly straight away, and John and Mary come into it. And then there's loads of little scenes that are amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very good.
It's very clever. I don't know if they wrote the first episode first. They probably didn't.
I don't know.
But they did establish it very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just wondering, though, it is very Irish. It is amazing. It must have been amazing for an English audience to watch this and go, what is this programme? Do you know what I mean?
Well, let's say just thought it was very surreal.
Yeah.
And they didn't realise that it reflected Irish life.
Yeah.
So it means a different thing. It's just a very odd, surreal sitcom.
Yeah.
But to us, it's like a documentary almost. Like, we got our independence and we didn't make a great go of it.
We got our independence and we gave our independence to the church.
The church. The Brits left and they just gave the keys to the church.
Mm.
And English people didn't really know that.
No.
Yeah.
And I think there was a bit of criticism from the Irish in Britain at the time as well.
And America, they couldn't handle it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I suppose, I would say that it was great because it was the Irish laughing at themselves and taking ownership of our own culture. But some Irish in Britain would go, look, it's shown us as alcoholics and idiots.
The other thing, just the myth about this being turned down by RTE is, you know, it is a myth.
It's a total myth.
And there's no way RTE, I mean, the budget for that show was phenomenal. They put a lot of money into it. And the studios in the South Bank were amazing. And there's no studio in Ireland at that time, certainly, who could have, you could have recorded. I mean, they made, I don't know what the budget was for each episode, but it was huge.
Yeah,
it was pretty
much
what an RT would spend on a series.
Yeah.
You know?
It was amazing. Even the pay.
No, they were very decent. We were very well treated. That's the first episode.
This first episode on the end scene. There's always an end scene as well after during the credits. They're stuck up on the chair.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so I know what it is. It's the fun fair with the announcements.
Yeah.
And Arthur Matthews is doing the announcements.
Yeah.
And it's very funny.
Yeah. You've been listening to Talking Ted.
And thank you, Ardla Hanlon and Pat Short, for talking to us.
This show is a part of the Headstuff Podcast Network. To support the show and for bonus content and lots more, you can become a member of Headstuff Plus. Go to headstuffpodcasts.com.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Headstuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.